Good morning. This is Focus 580, our morning telephone talk show. My name is Jack Brighton, sitting in for David Inge. Pianist Bruce Hornsby has written and played a lot of music. His debut album, The Way It Is, which you just heard a section of, won him a Grammy Award for Best New Artist in 1987. He also won a Grammy for Best Bluegrass Recording for his song The Valley Road, which appeared on the album Will the Circle Be Unbroken by the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band. And he won a third Grammy for Best Pop Instrumental Performance with Bradford Marsalis for their song Barcelona Mona, written for the Barcelona Olympics. Bruce Hornsby's 8 albums have sold more than 10 million copies worldwide, and he's played on more than 100 other records by artists ranging from Bob Dylan to Bella Fleck. He's also written songs performed by Willie Nelson, Chaka Khan, Sarah Evans, and Tupac Shakur, to name just a few. He has performed in concert on great stages all over the world, and this Saturday he will be performing on one of the great stages at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts here at the University of Illinois. During this part of Focus 580, we'll have a conversation with Bruce Hornsby about music, something we don't do often enough on this show. We'll also play some recordings from the WILL Bruce Hornsby Collection. You didn't know we had that, did you? Indeed we do, and as we do that, we invite you into the conversation with Bruce Hornsby to ask questions about his career, his music, or just music in general. As we talk, you can call us around Champaign-Urbana at 333-9455. We also have a toll-free line anywhere you hear us around the Midwest and via the internet anywhere in the U.S., 800-222-9455, anytime during this hour. And once again, Bruce Hornsby will be performing this Saturday, 7:30, at the Krannert Tryon Theater here at the University of Illinois in Urbana. And he joins us this morning by telephone. Bruce Hornsby, good morning.
Jack, is that you're Jack?
I am Jack.
Well, you know, Jack, is this a PBS station? You have sort of a PBS voice, which I love.
Oh, thank you very much. Yes, I'm afraid I do.
No, when you started talking in that kind of voice like that, I went, oh, this is great. This is probably not your standard commercial station, which is a beautiful thing because I don't have to, you know, I can talk about interesting things.
Anything you want. Absolutely right.
Rather than someone trying to get me to play a kazoo on their morning zoo station.
No, we won't ask you to do that.
That's a lovely thing for me. I was happy to hear that Jack voice.
All right. Well,
the inimitable PBS stylings of Jack.
That's right. Well, usually we're not very interesting on the show. We have a motto that we dare to be dull. You know, we talk about politics and public policy and, you know, the environment and education and health care and all that kind of stuff.
Wow. So this death penalty and all that.
Yeah, we do that too. Death penalty is a big thing. But we're glad to talk about music, so we're happy that you could join us.
Now, was Governor Ryan, he's Illinois, right?
Correct, yeah. Well, ex-Governor Ryan.
Yeah, but, I know, ex-Ryan. Yeah. I liked what he did, though.
You're with it, okay.
Oh, I'm completely with it.
Absolutely. Well, he visited Cuba, too. You probably remember that.
No, I don't know. He went to hang out with Castro, huh?
Well, I don't know if he... Yeah, they, sipped mint juleps over on the... No, I don't know. But anyway...
I was with that movie, 167 Death Row Prisoners, right?
Something like that, exactly right. Yeah, it was a major deal.
Yeah, my wife went to Cuba last year. She had a ball with Cuba.
Wow.
Yeah, so Ryan and my wife have a lot in common there.
She's
anti-death penalty also.
Well, that's great. All right, well, listen, let's talk about some music.
And well, I thought we could talk about boring things like that. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's okay. We'll get to that later. I wanted to ask you, you're going to be performing solo piano this Saturday here in town.
Yeah.
And I wondered, do you do that a lot?
I don't do it as much as I play with my band, but I love to do it. It's much more difficult than playing with my band because you know, there's nothing to fall back on. A lot of times when I'm playing with my band, I just get up and walk around while they play. It's very fun, but it's very loose. But it's a different expression. It's obviously a freer expression, although my band is a very free situation too because we always try to make the music new. I do the same thing with the solo piano in the solo piano context. About 1995, I recommitted myself to the study of the piano and developed some areas of piano playing that I'd never even sniffed at before, and made it so I can really play a solo piano concert the way I always wanted to do it. It's hard to describe it. It has a lot to do with developing independence of the hands, being able to play something, some rhythmic ostinato or figure or pattern, or chord pattern in the left hand, and be able to be very free it's soloing over that in the right hand, sort of like two people playing, sort of like splitting your brain, rubbing your stomach and patting your head, that sort of thing.
Right. Obviously, you have a lot more freedom, although, as you say, in your band, you also, I imagine that you have an amazing band, first of all.
So do you know my record, Here Come the Noisemakers?
Yes.
Okay, well, then you would know. Yeah, it's a good group. We've been together for quite a while now, this particular crowd, and we love playing together because it's always different every night.
I'm sure it is, and it gives you a lot of freedom to improvise, I'm sure, in that setting. Well, you do a lot of solo piano stuff to intro some of the songs.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you hear a little bit of what I'm talking about on that record, even on the very top of the CD, first CD. I start off with a solo piano thing, and also through the song King of the Hill, it breaks down to just drums and piano. So it's the same sort of thing that you would hear at Krannert Hall. I've never been to Champaign Urbana. And you have to always say the two together?
You don't have to. Some people say Champaign Urbana. There's a big controversy over this.
Uh-huh.
I'm from Urbana originally, so I say Urbana first.
Oh, so if I said Urbana-Champaign, that's a good way to sort of piss somebody off?
Well, they're not fighting words. So
okay.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah, Krannert, by the way, is just an absolutely top-notch performance facility, so I think you're going to really have a great time.
I've heard nothing but great things about it. I love to do this solo thing. Like I say, it's a very sort of freewheeling way to go. I don't have a set list. I take requests from the audience.
Really?
Yeah, the people. Hopefully there will be some people there who have seen me play before and would know sort of our drill, which is this. We generally walk out on stage, and there when we go out of stage, we're greeted by 50 to 100 pieces of paper on the strewn around the stage.
Wow.
with the requests on them, and it often leads me into interesting places.
Do you treat your material different when you have that freedom? I mean, do you just kind of go for it?
I mean, oh sure,
yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah. So every night's very different.
Well, yeah. There's some as a solo piano. I have some certain set arrangements that I generally play, but within those arrangements, I sort of take it. I'm pretty loose with the arrangements. He said phlegmatically.
What do you want from the? You take requests. What kind of reaction do you want from the audience? Do you want them to listen respectfully with hands folded or what?
That usually doesn't really happen. Okay. There's certainly. See, I have an interesting audience. It's comprised of a very wide-ranging audience in the sense that it really sort of it comes from my oddball sort of arc of my career. Mm-hmm. I came out in first 5 or 6 years of my musical national or international musical life had a bunch of hits, top 40 hits.
Yes.
We didn't expect that. It was just a wonderful accident that happened. Started over in England, in the way it is broke, and then in Holland, and then throughout Europe, and then in the United States and around the world. So we acquired, originally our audience was, your basic radio audience, mm-hmm. which can be a very fickle audience, mm-hmm. frankly, a very sort of here today, gone tomorrow. Once you stop having hits, generally that audience is through with you. But then after 1990, I started playing with the Dead and acquired a bit of that audience coming to my shows, and a lot of those the people who came to my shows who were turned on to me from that scene have stayed. And so we have Stockbroker Stan trying to coexist peacefully with Dreadlock Dave.
Right.
And it fights actually break out sometimes. I've actually had a fight break out at a solo piano concert.
Whoa.
It was a beautiful moment in West Palm Beach, Florida. This young guy, a 22-year-old, was taping the concert for bootleg tape, because I allow that, just like the Dead always did. And he was in the front row with his nice recording equipment, nice mics, and there was a guy a few seats down from him, older guy with his date or wife, who was just talking through the show. And I'm surprised I didn't hear that, frankly, because if people talk while I'm playing, I just stop.
Yeah.
Because I don't like that.
Yeah.
And so if I hear it, but I didn't hear this guy, but this other, the taper heard this guy, and he said, listen, would you please be quiet? I'm trying to enjoy the show, one, and two, I'm trying to tape the show, record the show. And the guy said, hey, you know, screw you, you know, I paid for my ticket, and I do what I want. Well, they got in a fight, which was just hilarious to me. I'm not sure how often fights break out at solo piano concerts, but it was a perfect example of two different mindsets colliding. You know, the people who are there for, on a casual level because they like a few songs, sort of on a nostalgic level.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of people who go to hear groups, they go to hear them for a nostalgic reason.
Yeah.
They want to hear the old songs played just like they know them.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I'm really not the guy to go see if that's what you're going to see. I will maybe play some of the old songs, but I don't play them like the record at all.
Yeah.
And but then we have the people who are the true music lovers, and who have been with us sort of, these are Latter-day fans from say 1990 on, and they're there for what I consider to be the right reasons, and they really don't like the casual listener.
Mm-hmm.
In the band concerts, this manifests itself in the situation where one guy's up dancing, and the guy behind him wants to sit down and enjoy it with his wife, and he tells the guy to sit down, and the guy, the dancer, says, hey, loosen up, old stiff, and there they go.
So you have a really interesting audience dynamic going on.
It really is different. It's not typical. Who knows what it'll be like at the Krannert, but this was a very long-winded answer to your question. What do I want from my from the audience at a solo piano show? Well, I want them to be quiet when I'm playing.
Yeah.
Although it's not talking. I'm great with hooting and clapping and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Responses to the music. But if someone is, you know, telling their date about what they should, you know, hey, what do you want to do tomorrow?
Right.
Now, that's not for me.
Okay. All right. Everybody out there, listen up. That's what we expect.
Okay.
I want to, you know,
Luther Howard is all good, though.
Right. This disc, Here Come the Noisemakers, is simply wonderful. It's a live double disc CD that has a lot of great performances. And I want to play a little bit of that in a minute or so, but we do have a listener waiting patiently.
Oh, great.
To talk with you, so let's include them in our conversation. This is someone in Chicago on line number 4. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hello. I'm so pleased to be able to speak to you. I absolutely adore the way it is, and I love it for the exuberance and the vibrancy. And the only other music that comes to mind like that is Horace Silver's Song for My Father. It has that same vibrancy. But what I find really interesting is that as vibrant as the instrumental is, the lyrics are almost fatalistic. And did you intend that contrast between the exuberance and the vibrancy of the music and the lyrics?
Well, that's a really interesting question, and I love Song for My Father. Horace Silver, I didn't think that name would come into this conversation, but I love that. I saw Horace Silver when I was like 19 years old at the Jazz Workshop in Boston. The Brecker Brothers were in his band, and it was a fabulous musical experience for a young geek trying to figure out music. But, you know, really, it's not fatalistic, and the one line, the last line of the chorus, is what makes it not. It's, oh, but don't you believe them.
Yeah.
They say that's just the way it is, but don't believe them.
Okay.
You know, so in that sense, it's not fatalistic. It's in the face of all this bad attitudes and old, terrible, traditional ways of thinking, don't buy into it.
Well, thank you so
much. You understand what I'm saying?
Song. Yeah. I understand, and I thank you for that song. I adore it.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call.
I wonder if she's ever heard Tupac's version.
I haven't heard Tupac's version.
Oh, well, Tupac's version is bad. Bad meaning good.
Yeah.
It's called Changes. He took the music, and I guess just the phrase, that's the way it is, and wrote new words to it. And it's really great. It was the single off of his greatest hits record, which has now sold 14 million around the world.
My goodness.
So that was, I must say, I love the checks also.
Yeah, well, good.
But I love what he did with the song. Six different rappers or R&B artists have taken the way it is and turned it into new songs for themselves. But this is the best version for me.
Oh, how about that? I'll have to look for that for sure.
Yeah, it's easily found. It's a very popular record. I think it's probably still a real solid seller for the Tupac estate because it's his greatest hits record. It's a fantastic album, the whole thing.
Well, we're a little bit too busy talking about the death penalty and healthcare reform around here to, you know, get out and check
deal
out.
Deal with the Tupac's greatest
but
hits, right.
We'll make an effort.
Okay.
I want to tell folks, if you'd like to join us, the number again around Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free elsewhere, 800.
Yeah, I love taking calls. I love to do that.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can get some more people who would like to do that.
Okay.
800-222-9455. We're talking with Bruce Hornsby, and we're also going to play some music here. I wanted to ask you, though, about something the caller mentioned, the words, the writing. I mean, I think that your songs are great stories, and it seems that you really have a gift for storytelling through music.
I think it's all about who my influences were. You know, as you grow up, certain things move you, and certain things you're okay with, and certain things you really don't care about. I tended to, when I was growing up, be really taken with story songs, the folk song tradition, Bob Dylan, who was so influenced, of course, by old folk music, and Woody Guthrie, and then Robbie Robertson and the band. I loved the storytelling and the scene setting, taking you to a place. It really had a sense of place. I always wanted my music to have a real strong sense of place. My first four records were really pretty much written, and lots of the music since then, pretty much written from experiences growing up in my small southern town of Williamsburg, Virginia, where I am now. Or the early Elton John records, Tumbleweed Connection especially, Madman Across the Water, great story songs on those records. And so I guess it's just been me emulating the people who I loved and trying to find my own way of doing it. I've always been influenced by southern fiction, people like Lee Smith, William Hoffman, William Styron, who's from my area here in Tidewater, Virginia. So I always wanted to sort of do my version of that, my version of the Southern storytelling tradition.
Mm-hmm. We have another caller to talk with. Let's include them in our conversation. A listener in Champaign next on line number one. Good morning. You're on Focus 580.
Hi. Yeah. My name's Bill. It's wonderful to get to talk to you, Mr. Hornsby. I remember hearing you a long time ago in a grocery store, and I said, "Who is that?" And then I found out who you were and bought about five copies of that for all my friends. And,
oh, thanks a lot.
You're welcome. I love that you mentioned Mad Men Across the Water, because up to the time I heard you do that song.
Yeah, right. I didn't do that song on the Elton John tribute record, right.
Right. When I heard you do that, I thought, this man, it has huge hands. The chords are spread out over the whole piano. It was just amazing, and I love Elton John, but for me, you did the best version.
Well, I try to take it to sort of a McCoy Tyner place. Do you know who that is?
Yeah. Yes, I sure do. He has huge hands. I actually got it.
Well, I've actually got little girls' hands like Jake LaMotta, but I guess I've tried to spread them out because people say when they see me playing, it looks like they're huge. So that's a good thing. A lot of my favorite piano players, Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, they have small hands, so. It's not that big of a problem. It's hard for me to play old stride music, which is about tenths in the bass.
Right.
I can only reach the white note tenths, not the black note tenths.
Yeah. I have stubby hands, and I don't play piano. I play guitar. But I just thought that your harmony for Mad Men stretched the boundaries and really made it a jazz tune for me.
Well, that's exactly right. I think our version was by far the most uncommercial song on that Two Rooms tribute to Elton. I'm not even sure. I know Elton pretty well, and he's never mentioned that song, so I'm not sure he really liked my version, but I like it. We had been part of the dedicated Grateful Dead tribute record before that. We did a version of Jack Straw, and
Great version. I felt
that we were a little true to the original, and so I felt like my next time around on a tribute record, I wanted to take it to a completely unique place. So we try to do that on Mad Men. So I'm glad you like that.
I did, and I'm really happy for your musicianship and what you offer musicians as well as listeners, because I think you cross a line. You go from a real educated listener can enjoy you, but a pop listener can like you a lot too, and I just love that.
Well, thank you, Bill. I'm just an old music school geek. You know, I'm actually someone who is a proponent of, you know, good playing. It's not really such a big deal in popular music. I mean, it's amazing. I took my 11-year-old twins to this great rap show down in Virginia Beach about a month ago. It was Buster Rhymes, Missy Elliott, 50 Cent, and Jay-Z. And there was not a musician on stage all night. It was all tape, and nobody cared out of the 13,000 people who were there. But it's a funny thing, because I was at the show, and I enjoyed the show, because I like a lot of this music a lot. But I thought it was very interesting in how the crowd was sort of into it sometimes, but actually really blasé, and the performers are screaming at the audience half the night, "Come on, put your hands together, come on, get them up." And I said to my sons, "Hey, guys, you ever seen me do that in a gig? I don't have to. Our crowd is way more, you know, sort of boisterous and into it than this crowd was." And so I thought that was very noteworthy. Like, you know, maybe if there were real people playing, there would be more an involvement. It was intangible, obviously, and I could be totally wrong about it, but it was a really interesting thing to see.
Well, it's always interesting to see musicians with rappers, because I think they get a better response.
Well, I've never seen that. I'd like to see it. Every rap show I've been to was just tape, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, with our generation, if you heard, you know, it's always been sort of offensive to find out that someone was lip-syncing. But in this scenario, it's not even an issue. You know, they are rapping to tape, and nobody cares. So it's a new day. So let a man get up and do the popcorn.
Well, thank you so much.
Hey, Bill, it's nice talking to you.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
That's an old James Brown song, by the way. It's the name of his album. It's A Brand New Day.
Uh-huh.
So let a man get up and do the popcorn. You remember Mother Popcorn, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
You?
Oh, yeah.
You ever had James Brown on your show?
No, I'd love to. He was recently in Chicago. I missed the show. Some buddies of mine caught it, and the man is just still on.
He is bad. Oh, he's a bad man.
Yeah, J.C., JB, I wanted to ask you about your musical style. The caller kind of referred to these big chords that you play,
yeah.
And you say you have small hands, but to me, your musical style has always been huge. I mean, not just the production values, but the voicings you use, very dense, interesting.
I know.
Yeah, well, I mean, but it's very unusual, but I think it kind of identifies your playing pretty much instantly, that there are these wonderful sort of, like, altered chords that imply a lot, that maybe, I don't know, maybe implies more than you're actually playing.
You are a musician. You must be there. I mean, you're using musical terms. Are you a musician, Jan?
I have been known to play.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's very true. People often ask me to describe my style, and chords, chordal movement, and, you know, harmonic aesthetic has always been a big part of my music and my style. I've described the way I play as Bill Evans meets the hymn book. And I was really influenced by the way Bill Evans, the great jazz pianist, played chords. And I've just taken that kind of, like I say, harmonic aesthetic along with a little bit of a folk music consciousness and turned that into sort of my way of playing chords. And so, yes, it's very important to me. Although, mind you, some of my favorite songs that I've written are three-chord songs. Lots of times I'll write songs lyrics first, and it's interesting how when you do that, the music that comes out tends to be much simpler than when you're coming up with music first, when you're at the piano and you've come up with some supposedly clever chord progression or melodic line. Rainbow's Cadillac comes to mind. It's a song that I wrote lyrics first. Talk of the Town's another. There are lots of them where they're just three-chord songs, very simple songs. They could be even blues type of songs. And they're some of my favorites. But writing songs, sometimes lyrics first and sometimes music first, I like doing it different ways because it makes the music not all sound the same, you know.
Well, I want to play some more music. I almost hate to we have another caller waiting. I hate to make them wait.
Well, let's take them and then play the song.
All right, let's talk with this next listener, and then we'll do that. Line number two, someone in Urbana next. Good morning.
Bruce, don't let Jack kid you. He is a fine musician. He's one of the best guitar players in Champaign Urbana. So.
Oh, stop!
I sensed a little false modesty when he said, "Oh,
yes,
I've been known to play a little bit."
Yes.
Yeah. When someone says I've been known to play, I go, "Okay, there."
Okay. No, he knows exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah. No, I can tell.
Stop, y'all.
Well, I'm very thrilled to talk to you. I've seen you. Oh gosh, I'm a classically trained pianist. Started out playing in rock and roll with Carole King back in, oh gosh, I hate to say, those of you who know Carole King will know how long ago that was.
Yeah, sure, Tapestry.
Yeah, Tapestry album years ago, and I'm still playing. And what I've found so amazing with your style as I've seen you over the last couple of years, and particularly I saw you in Orchestra Hall.
Oh, yes.
This year maybe, or a year, I don't know.
Was it last Symphony Hall in Chicago?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, right. You were there.
That was fabulous. And I was on balcony on the piano side, and your left hand. How does the man do it? And I know, Jack, this is kind of a technical question, but you mentioned some of the folks that you studied, but I know that you did make reference to you've taken time out, and I've seen the difference in your, the change in the playing over the years.
Oh, yeah, it's really different now.
It really is different. And what are the things that you have, what has changed it? Because as being a, I'm a piano player. I don't even call myself a keyboard player because I really am a pianist. But when I have to play keyboards in a band, I always have a very rhythmic, you can't step on your bass player's toes.
That's right.
He gets upset at me when I do that. He says,
"Yeah, I have to leave
my
left hand sort of out of it a lot of times when I'm playing with the band." But I create, since it's my music, I create enough spaces where I can do it.
Right. So, what kind of things have you done? Because I do like to do solo work, and I would love to. And in the band that I play in, I do some solo work, and I take off for a little while and do something crazy while they walk off stage or whatever.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so what are the things that you have worked on or somebody that you could reference me or anything, let me know what you've done to get that left hand so incredible.
Well, about 1995, I sort of recommitted myself to the study of the piano. I think I referred to it earlier
when we
were talking. And the reason I did that was because I would find myself often in solo piano contexts and I would just feel so inadequate. The way I wanted to do it, I couldn't do it. And it was all about a solid left hand. The left hand is the band when you're trying to play rhythmically as a solo pianist. Are you coming to the concert?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then you've already seen it. You've seen me before, but you'll see it more, obviously, more intensely.
That's right. And
just
that's
playing
what
by
I'm
myself.
Really
but
looking
but all I did, I wanted to develop this independence of the hands that I was referring to earlier, which is really about getting some sort of left-hand pattern or a chord progression or ostinato going in the left hand, and then being able to develop the freedom to solo in the right hand over top of that. It's really a splitting your brain
right.
Scenario. And so all I can say is I just did it for hours and hours and hours every day until I could do it. It was just simply just being willing to suck at it for a long time until I got it. It's very hard. It's a very difficult thing to do. But the way to do it is to just get a simple pattern going in your left hand. It's not so simple, but a perfect example is this. Do you know my song "Sneaking Up on Boo Radley"?
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a song written around a left hand ostinato. Dun, 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 and so I would get that going and then just try to play like I'd play that in the left hand and then I would just go bing on the left hand. Just play, you got to sort of learn how to crawl before you can walk, before you
right.
can run. And then I would just, I could just play like whole notes in the right hand with the left hand being solid. Then I'd go to half notes.
Uh-huh.
Then I'd go to quarter notes. Ding, Then I'd try to play a different two notes. Dum, mm, 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 while this left hand
right.
pattern is going. You see?
Right.
And then you gradually build it up. Then a dum, 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 then you play a scale. Then you play eighth notes. And then you get, this is a long process I'm trying to just.
Sure, I understand.
But in a few seconds here, but. Then the real trick is when you try to play sort of odd, sort of arrhythmically or sort of extended, you know, polyrhythmic polyrhythms, like, you know, so you got the dum dum dum, you start got the dum 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 dum, you know, that's when it really gets crazy. And but gradually, you will find, if you're willing to have, if you have the patience and are willing to just sit there and do it for a long, long time, you'll find that you can actually do this. It's just a learned skill. It just takes a lot of practice.
Okay.
So that's it.
Well,
now, that's a pretty hard asana. Just do something very simple.
Right.
But then just try to play, you know, crawl and then walk and then run in the right hand with it.
Okay.
And that's really pretty simple conceptually. It's just hard in practice.
In practice. That's the definitive word.
Yeah, that's it.
Thank you so much.
You can drive. You have to do this in private though, because you'll drive anyone around you completely crazy. Because you'll be playing the same thing for, you know, 2 hours.
I'll see what I can do about that.
Yeah, well, good luck to you. That's a great question.
See you on Saturday?
Oh, that's right. See you then.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Other musicians are welcome to join us, or non-musicians. 333.
We've got a lot of technical musician calls here.
Yeah, well, it's...
Which is fine. I love that.
Actually, Champaign-Urbana has always been a very musical town.
Well, I feel like I'm doing an interview with Keyboard Magazine here as opposed to, you know, Rolling Stone, which is really nice.
All right. Well, I want to actually play the cut that you mentioned, sneaking up on Boo Radley, to give people a little bit of context here for what we just kind of described.
Sure.
All right. So let's listen to a little bit of that. We'll fade it out because, you know, we're going to run out of time, but let's hear some of Sneaking Up on Boo Radley. And this is from the disc Here Come the Noisemakers, which was from live concerts recorded around the year 2000.
Up to the back door, reach up in the dark, handle a little more, open up real slow, so the door won't creak. Look ahead, look behind, don't shuffle your feet. Hey, say he's crazy, say he's gone, play our tricks, make up funny songs, sneaking around, feeling badly, sneaking up on Boo Radley.
Sorry, we're going to have to fade it out there because...
That was fast, a quick fade.
I know. Well, hey. And thanks to Henry Frain, by the way, the controls, who I'm making do all this crazy stuff. We have another call to take, but I wanted to ask you, I'm hearing some Monk in there.
Oh, sure. I love Monk.
Yeah.
Monk is sort of the most unpianistic of pianists, and that's what makes him so unique and so beautiful in his own way. And he was such a great composer, too. So there's probably a bit of Monk in there. I wouldn't necessarily said that, but I know what you mean.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll play some more, but first let's talk with another listener, someone in Urbana on line number one. Good morning.
Hello.
Yes.
I was actually fortunate enough to meet you briefly backstage at a concert that you did with String Cheese Incident of all people, and
I was really mean to you, right?
No, you weren't. You were great.
Okay, I'm kidding.
It was between sets, and so.
Oh, that's in Denver, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay.
And there was a lot going on that night. I was there with a friend of mine who knows everybody pretty well. But the question is that, yeah, that was kind of an interesting one-off situation, and I've seen on your website a lot of the fans that write in are often asking, you know, well, who's Bruce going to play with, or who do you want Bruce to play with, or, you know, things like that. And
who do they say?
Oh, well, I just recently looked, and there was all kinds of names thrown around, and some of them were, you know, String Cheese Incident and this jam band and that jam band and so forth. And to me, that's a little a little loose, although I really enjoyed hearing you throw structure at them that particular night. I saw Billy Payne's name showed up there as well as somebody said, you know, probably be great to see those two play together. And,
right.
But anyway, my question was, what for the future? This is such a great thing to have a solo concert. I've always kind of when I've gone to see you perform, and I live for those 5-minute breaks where you just play by yourself. So this is going to be a great treat.
That's right. No, then you'll live for hope for the 5-minute breaks where our band was playing. Hopefully not. I'll try to make it so you won't think that.
I don't think I will. I love the piano. In fact, the last caller is I'll out somebody briefly. The last caller, the pianist that you talked to, is I think the person that's going to be playing in the lobby before and after your show.
So oh, okay.
You might stick your head out.
Wall to wall piano at the Kranert, then.
Well, okay. one would hope she's going to be with her band. But anyway, my question was, what is the future? What do you want the future to hold for Bruce Hornsby as far as recordings and live appearances? Do you want to go back and do some things with your band after the break, or are you looking? Do you think you'll be doing more solo work?
Well, it's so many things. There's so many things to do. I'm making this record now that will hopefully come out next spring, unless I screw it up, which I often do because I'm not very good at the recording process. But we'll tour then on that record with the band like crazy. In fact, our next live album, which would be called Bride of the Noisemakers, there's a version that there will also be a version of Boo Radley on that, only because the song has evolved so far from that version you were just playing, which incidentally was from the BET Jazz Central show. That's where that version from Here Come the Noisemakers comes from. Anyway,
that show was wonderful.
Oh, you know that show? Yeah, that was a good show. Very fun for us. They actually let us stretch on TV, kind of like Austin City Limits, which is another fabulous show. Anyway, we'll be touring on that. Then I want to make a bluegrass record, probably with Ricky Skaggs. We've been talking about it for years. I've made a record with him, Darling Corey, for his Big Mun Bill Monroe tribute album. And we've always talked about doing this. So I would love to do that. But I will release some solo piano concerts, too, that we've been compiling through the years.
Great.
So that there will be some live records. But they won't come out until after this studio record. There's so many things to do. But those are some, certainly the bluegrass thing and some solo concerts and solo records. At some point, I'd like to make a jazz record, too. I've often said this, and I've got a bunch of great jazz musicians who've often said, just give me a call when you want to do it. But it's such a difficult music to really play it great, and so I really would need to take the time to really get involved with it deeply. I think I've figured out my own way of playing the jazz standard repertoire, which is unique to me, sort of chordally, voicing-wise. So that's another thing I'd like to do. There's a bunch of different things.
That would be great to hear. I know Monk and Tyner have both been mentioned. I tend to feel like I hear a lot of Bill Evans and Rachmaninoff, of all people. But
and who's that?
Rachmaninoff.
Well, actually, I play one of Rachmaninoff's preludes in my concerts every now and then, the A minor prelude.
Would that be up for a slip of paper on the stage?
Well, I better go practice it. It's very difficult.
It is. So much, and we're all really looking forward to this.
Oh, thank you. I look forward to it, too. I'll see you then.
Special event for us. Thank you.
Okay, thanks for the call. There's a lot of traditional influences in your music. You say, you know, you've done some bluegrass stuff and some country stuff and some, you know, different things that I think you always tend to lend a jazz sensibility to it.
Yeah, that's true. Like, did you hear the Ricky Skaggs record?
No, I did not. I'm sorry.
You did, in fact, it's played actually quite often on PBS. I'll tell you what PBS is.
NPR?
What's NPR stations around the country.
Yeah.
It's called Darling Corey. It's the first song on the Big Mun CD, Ricky Skaggs, which is quite a CD. Patti Loveless, Dixie Chicks, Travis Tritt. Lots of great people are on that record. Dolly Parton is on right after me. Anyway, Darling Corey, and you would hear exactly what you've just been saying. Bill Evans chords in with sort of a bluesy bluegrass feel.
Now,
I love that, so I love doing it.
Well, we got to talk about Big Swing Face.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is...
On the other side of the spectrum.
Exactly. This disc came out in 2002.
It was a complete stiff. The record company did nothing for it.
Really?
Oh, they were... They paid lip service to, like, all through the making of the record. Oh, yeah, this is great. This is just what you should do, and blah, blah, blah. And then when we turned it in, there was this loud silence, you know. They just totally lost their edge and sort of their courage to really deal with a record like this. For many years, RCA has been, you know, very much about, well, just like most of the major labels, they're very much about pop and hit radio, so they didn't do jack for this record. So yeah, it was the biggest stiff of my career. But you know what? I like it a lot.
I love the record.
I'm proud of it. I think it holds up and will hold up. You know, a lot of our more traditional fans who continue to pine for another Mandolin Rain, you know, really hated it probably, but I can't be bothered with that. It's a drag to just repeat yourself just because someone else thinks you should, you know.
Well, can we play a little bit off that?
Oh, sure. Which one did you want to play?
Well, I want to start off with the opening track.
Oh, fantastic. That's what I thought. I hope you'd say that.
Yeah, Sticks and Stones. This is a great cut. And and again, we'll probably fade out midstream here because, you know, time is short. But,
okay.
But let's hear. This is Sticks and Stones off the disc Big Swing Face, released in 2002.
Turning red, pizza face, pop it quick, go nasty, old pit, so panty waist, naughty, hated, fatty cake. Old sticks and stones can break my bones, but your words always hurt me the most. My scars will heal, but the scars won't.
I love that. That is incredible.
Naughty-headed fatty cake.
I don't think chords like that have ever been played on this station.
Chords like that?
Well, you know.
Yeah, right? I know what you mean. That's a major disappointment for me that when I hear that song. I like it a lot, too,
yeah.
And I wish it had gotten heard. It had been heard by more people.
Well, I mean, I can't say that I'm in the mainstream of the radio listenership. So, but you know, I'd love to hear that on the music stations around here. And I don't understand. I guess I'm curious about that. Has the business of music changed since you? I mean, or has it always been oriented toward, you know, the narrow band of supposed accessibility?
Well, it's always been like that, but it's just like that more so. There was always a large periphery, you know, that wasn't about that. But now that periphery is, you know, is a smaller and smaller area all the time, and you're seeing major labels. It costs so much to even try to have a hit record now, at that major labels are so freaked out by this that they're so afraid to pull the trigger on anything, and so consequently the only thing just about that they'll pull the trigger on as far as really making a big financial commitment to a record to try to really make it, to have it push through the morass of music that's out there, is to have music that's so almost generic and formulaic, and that's why you have radio that sounds like it does. I mean, now mind you, then you have people like Eminem, who I think is fantastic and totally unique and writes great songs, and that pushes through I mean, maybe just because it's just so great. To me, that's just my feeling about it. I think he's really great. And a lot of the rap music is so, it's so original. It's so unique. It's the only new thing that's happened in music, you know, for years. I mean, what a concept. No melody, you know. So I like that. But generally, certainly on sort of the pop stations, it's pretty much generica as usual, and worse than ever to me.
We're just about out of time, and there's so many things I wanted to talk to you about. I want to make sure to plug the gig again and also mention your website. You have a website where people can find out about your recordings.
Yeah, there are a couple of websites. There's brucehornsby.com that has a lot of funny pictures on it and has our new Fan of the Month feature, which is interesting. We don't take ourselves very seriously.
You like to have a little fun.
We like to have nothing but fun. And then there's a really great, for my money, better site than our own sort of official one. It's out of England. It's called BRUUUCE.com, Bruce.com. And there's all sorts of things going on
great.
Bruce.com all the time. So those are the two best ones to me. There are others too, though. There are other good ones. So yes, you can find out all sorts of inane and worthless information about me.
Great way to spend some time, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you. Okay, I think they have some. They may even have some bootleg downloads on BR on the 3U's site.
Okay.
And so if people want to, and there's a lot of tape trading on these sites, I believe. Not so much on the BruceHornsby.com, but on that one, and there's some others, recmusic.artists.
Oh, yes.
I'm pretty much of a computer illiterate. I don't know a whole lot about it, but I can access the websites, and every once in a blue moon, I'll go on there and see what the people are saying or screaming about.
Well,
a lot of them this year were screaming, "Why didn't you play with the dead?"
Well, let's, you know,
so that's a whole different topic.
And I'd love to
deal with that on another version of this.
I hope so, and I want to come back to the death penalty, too.
We'll have to do that again.
Yeah.
Right. The dead and the death penalty.
Okay. There's a segue there, I'm sure.
I think so.
We're going to have to stop. We're out of time. I want to mention Bruce Hornsby will be performing this Saturday, at the Tryon Festival Theater at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts here in Champaign-Urbana.
Hey, I did your whole 50 minutes, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah, I was only supposed to do a half an hour, but you stuck to me, and good job.
Well, thanks. I didn't want to remind you of the time, so
I know
it was
that.
Very sneaky. I want to thank you. I really appreciate your time. It's been great talking with you.
My pleasure. We'll do it again.
And we'll see you Saturday.
All right, thank you, Jack.
All right, take care.
All right, bye.
That's Bruce Hornsby, and before we wrap up, I want to play at least a few more seconds of a live recording that he did, and then we'll turn things over. And this is a cut from Here Comes the Noisemakers, the intro to The Way It Is.
Says, get a job. That's just the way it is.